Śrīla Haridāsa Thakura ki jai. Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shama Kundradha Kundigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Nabadeep Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jamana Mai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Prindaki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Go Premanande. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
If one of you gentlemen would be kind enough to leave the Sanskrit.
About the sages.
Sadhu. About the devotees.
Sarvan.
All of them.
Varnam.
Sections.
Sata.
As also.
Ashraman.
Orders of human society.
I
am thinking about myself and also, O best amongst the demigods, about you, as well as about all the demigods, sages, denizens of Pitraloka, devotees of the Lord, and all men obedient to the system of varna and ashram in human society. Purport. To effect the perfection of human life, there is cooperation between men and demigods, sages, denizens of the Pitriloka, devotees of the Lord, and the scientific system of varna and ashrama, orders of life. The distinction between human life and animal life therefore begins with the scientific system of varna and ashrama, guided by the experience of the sages in relation with the demigods, gradually rising to the summit of re-establishing our eternal relation with the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. When God made Varnashram Dharma, which is strictly meant for developing animal consciousness into human consciousness, and human consciousness into godly consciousness, is broken by advancement of foolishness, the whole system of peaceful and progressive life is at once disturbed. In the age of Kali, the first attack of the venomous snake strikes against the God-made Varnashram Dharma, and thus a person properly qualified as a Brahmin is called a Shudra, and a Shudra by qualification. A Shudra by qualification is passing as a Brahmin, all on a false birthright claim. To become a Brahmin by birthright claim is not at all bona fide, although it may be a fulfillment of one of the conditions. But the real qualification of a Brahmana is to control the mind and the senses, and to cultivate tolerance, simplicity, cleanliness, knowledge, truthfulness, devotion, and faith in the Vedic wisdom. In the present age, consideration of the necessary qualification is being neglected, and the false birthright claim is being supported even by a popular sophisticated poet, the author of Ramcharitamansa. This is all due to the influence of the age of Kali. Thus, Mother Earth, represented as a cow, was lamenting the regrettable condition. Om Agyana Timirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tathati Shubhavantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Shadrajatam Shahagana Vaganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parishana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitanscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchako Pitarubhyascha Kripasindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Atmanam Chanusho Chami Bhavantam Chamarottamam Devan Pitrin Rishin Sadhun Sarvan Varnam Statashraman Anushochami. I'm lamenting and lamenting. Anushochami. Or I'm thinking about you and then I'm thinking about me. So your condition is very lamentable, so I'm also lamenting. Atmanam cha anushochami. Yes, bhavantam. Thinking about your situation and thinking about my situation. Equally lamentable. So anushochami. Lamenting. Amarottamam, O best of the demigods, the bull is representing the personality of religion, or the personality of religion is represented as the bull. Is that right? Speaking to the bull, or she's speaking to the king? To the bull. So she's speaking to the bull that you're the personified person, you're the personality of religion in the form of a bull. And now religion is going to be attacked. And the earth is also going to be attacked, plundered. So how lamentable it is. Devan, Pitrin, Rishim, Sadhun, and all of these, the devas also have a relationship with the earth and with the principles of religion. When the principles of religion are stopped, then the sacrifices are no longer offered to the demigods. And Pitrin, to the Pitris also, the Pinda, Lupta Pindodaka Kriya. That's described. Patanti. Patanti pitaro yesham lupta pindodaka kriya. The offerings are no longer made to the forefathers, and so they fall down from their position. And the rishis and sadhus, when religion is persecuted, then the rishis and the sadhus, their life becomes difficult. Sometimes we see that. I was told in China at some point, maybe Mao or somebody, they rounded up all the people who had glasses because they were
Cambodia.
Was it Cambodia? Because they were, if you're wearing glasses, your chances are you're an intellectual, you read too much. So they were rounded up and shot. Intellectuals are dangerous. We want nice, dull workers. Anyone who thinks too much is a threat. And what to speak of rishis, the most learned men who know what is what, they're a threat to despotic exploiters of a demonic nature. And sadhus, devotees, are also a threat because they have no loyalty to the mundane powers. Maybe some superficial loyalty, but their real loyalty is to God. They're dangerous also. Given a choice between the state and God, they'll choose God. They're dangerous people. And religion is a dangerous thing. Even the common people may be mobilized by religion. So if we can curb down religion, then we can control. Otherwise, religion is a threat. Either we have to wipe it out or co-opt it. As in the Soviet Union, basically, we run your church for you. Or you run your church at our pleasure. As long as you do what we allow. As long as you play ball, as they say in America. You can carry on. Otherwise, you can be shot. So the sadhus, the rishis, then Kamsa took charge. Then his business, when he felt threatened, persecute the Brahmins, kill the cows. Although the sadhus have no desire but the welfare of all, the demonic are opposed to the sadhus, because the sadhus are opposed to the demonic. So, devan, pitrin, rishin, sadhun. Sadhus are peaceful. That's characteristic of a sadhu, shanta. And sadhus have all good qualities. But the demons are envious of the sadhus, hateful toward the sadhus. Sadhus, rishis, pitris, devas. And sarvan varnans tatashrama. I'm lamenting for everyone, all the civilized people, the followers of the system of varna and ashram. Sarvan varnams tatashrama. Under the guidance of the rishis and the sadhus, the people are meant to be engaged according to the system of prescribed duties for the four social orders and four spiritual orders. Prabhupada says this will gradually bring one from the platform of animal life to human life, from human life to godly life, godly life to transcendental life. That's the purpose. Because not everyone will at once rise to the platform of spiritual life, but they can be included in the process of gradual upliftment. Sve sve karnam yubhidata samsiddhim lapate. What is that? Yata pravittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam datam sukarmanam talapyarcha siddhim vindati malaya. They can all be engaged. Everyone. One doesn't have to be a rishi, or one doesn't have to be a brahmin. According to one's position, everyone can be nicely engaged and connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, but that system is guna karma vibhagasya. It's created by Krishna. Chatur varnya maya shushu. Guna karma vibhagasya. According to one's qualities and according to one's actual work. Not according to janma or birth. So Prabhupada highlights that in the age of Kali, by birth becomes the qualification of a Brahmin or Kshatriya or whatever. Prabhupada said, by advancement of foolishness, the bodily concept of life is the platform of foolishness. But in Kali Yuga, that's what advances. I'm a Brahmin because I'm born in a Brahmin family. Although Brahmajanati iti Brahman, one who knows Brahma is actually a Brahmin, not Janasyama Oyama Amamiti, one who identifies with the body. So Prabhupada spotlights this as the attack of the snake against the progressive development of the peaceful human society. As soon as we depart from the God-made Varnashram system, Daivi Varnashram, and we go to Asari Varnashram, the ashrams, Varnas decided by birth only, then everything is disrupted. Samo dhamma tapasho chanakshanti rajana neva jam ganam viganam ashtikya. This is the nature of the Brahman. He has these qualities, control of the mind, control of the senses, austerity, tolerance, simplicity, knowledge, realization, practical application of knowledge, faith in the revealed scriptures, faith in the personality of Godhead. These are the brahminical qualifications. And just to rubber stamp someone as a Brahmin because of his birth is to misunderstand the whole system. Prabhupada obliquely criticizes a very popular, yet practically revered author of Ramcharitamrita. Therefore, we read when Srila Prabhupada speaks of the authorized scriptures, he'll usually say, and Valmiki Ramayana. Valmiki Ramayana. The original Ramayana written by the sage Valmiki, rather than the popular version written by a popular, sophisticated poet who supports false birthright claim. That's what Prabhupada highlights as points out as the defect here in the Ramcharitamanas. Not something we advertise very broadly with, but in a positive way. But we read the Valmiki Ramayana as authority. All right, maybe I'll stop here, see what kind of questions you might bring up. Yes?
This Valmiki Ramayana is accepted in other areas, in the areas of where he is describing about Ram.
Hold on, you're not being amplified for some reason.
Here, Prabhupada is not accepting the Tulsidas' false claim of birthright.
Yes.
Is it accepted in other areas where he is disturbing our Ram and other things?
Is it accepted in other?
Where Tulsidas is disturbing about Ram.
So does Prabhupada respect Tulsidas? Mm-hmm. And yes, Prabhupada sometimes there are other. Here he's criticizing Tulsidas. Sometimes he quotes Tulsidas. What is that? Dhatko Dhakini?
Dhinko Dhakini
Rakko. Dhinko Dhakini Rakko.
Bhagini,
yeah. A witch by day, a tigress by night. Prabhupada sometimes quotes that. There's elsewhere, Tulsidas states that the son, who's not the putra, who's not a devotee of the Lord, is actually mutra. And Prabhupada appreciates that also, and quotes. Prabhupada says Saint Tulsidas sometimes. Saint Tulsidas. He says Saint Tulsidas has written. I do not know whether you will agree, but he has written. Dinka Bhakini. So, Prabhupada sometimes appreciates
Tulsidas. But there's some defect there that Prabhupada has noted. And therefore, it doesn't seem to regard Tulsidas Ramayana as entirely reliable. Obviously, when Tulsidas says that Ram crossed the bridge to Lanka, we're not going to argue. Essentially, where he's in accord with other authorities, we accept. But we don't take him as a primary source, if you will. And Bhagavad Gita is there, so we don't need to rely on him. But sometimes Prabhupada quotes him approvingly, and sometimes, as here, he a bit obliquely criticizes, points out the fault. Okay. Something else? Yes.
Slower.
You're hearing competition with the banging over here, so let's wait for the banging to stop. And now we can start again. I'm getting 20% of what you're saying. Go slower, go clearer. You might as well do it. You know, life is long and you're young, so just slow down. That's the same speed you were going at. Just, you know, out of pity on the poor Americans, go a little slower. A reliable copy of Valmiki Ramayana. See, just you slowed down and it was all clear. It became understandable. Do we have a reliable, you mean, the real question is, do you have a reliable copy? I don't have anything on my laptop. I'd expect you guys to have the reliable copy of Tulsi Ramayana. By reliable, do you mean, are there different versions? Or what?
I mean, which is completely authorized by previous authorities.
Of Valmiki Ramayana?
Yes, all the chairs.
I'm not really, I don't really have much knowledge about it. It sounds like that's a textual question. That is to say, are there different versions of Valmiki Ramayana? Where do the texts differ from one another? That sort of a question. Is there a critical edition of Ramayana, or have acharyas in our line commented on Ramayana? That I don't know. Does anyone know? I don't know. I would expect that there's something, but I don't know.
Forefathers fall from their positions.
Yeah.
How to understand this?
Forefathers fall from their positions. How are we to understand that? I'm not very knowledgeable about that, but from what I understand, the Pitris maintain their position on account of pious activities, which are in part contributed by their descendants. I don't know much more than that. Does anyone here? Expert in Pitri Tattva, a little more knowledgeable about Pitri Tattva. Yes.
I've heard that even when a certain forefather, Pitri Loka, stops getting offerings,
again.
If a certain forefather in Pitri Loka stops receiving offerings, he gradually he becomes like a bum. Say, you know, his features change and he gradually turns into Yamaduta. and then he becomes a Yamadutta because of because of these.
You've heard that.
Actually, then he in that starved condition, he goes to Yamaraj, and then Yamaraj he officially makes him, appoints him as a Yamadutta.
I'll feed you, but you become one of my men.
That's it. Yeah. I heard this from Yuna Maharaj, Bhagavatam Path. He said it's a, he didn't say from which Purana, but it's from
some Purana someplace. We hear that sometimes the forefathers may be trapped in ghostly life from which they're delivered by this offering of Pinda. So this Pinda is considered that we know that they can, we've heard from Prabhupada, that they can fall into ghostly life. There's no offering of Pinda. Yes.
Are these particular forefathers?
They must be particular forefathers because there's a Pitri Loka, a planet of forefathers, but everybody's somebody's forefather. You know, the snake, the rabbit, they were all somebody's forefather at one point or another. So one would think that there has to be some particular subset of forefathers who become Pitris, but I don't really know who. Again, Pitri Tattvas. Something I'm not well versed in. Yes.
Is there any particular difference between the forefathers and the ancestors?
Between the forefathers and the ancestors? Essentially, no. Those are synonymous terms. Both translations of Pitri, forefathers, ancestors, but not trees. Something else. Yes.
Here in Prabhupada is discussing about Varnashrama Dharma.
Yes.
So in what extent we can adopt this principle?
We can what?
To what extent we can adopt this in ISKCON?
We can adopt in ISKCON Varnashrama principles. Prabhupada, in his later days, later year, was stressing very much the importance of Varnashram Dharma. Of course, he said that the devotees, sometimes he said different things. Devotees are transcendental to Varnashram Dharma. And sometimes he said, Dharma men need Varnashram Dharma, otherwise why are they falling down? For our society, and especially for the, as we read here, the human society in general, they may not all become sadhus, they may not all become brahmacharis, they may not all become sannyasis, but they can all take up some position within Varnashram Dharma, and in that way be engaged in normal life. The symptom of Kali Yuga, I think it's mentioned in other verses here, the people just become like dogs and monkeys. You know, the way the monkeys are having sex up and down the parikrama mark. People in general become like that. You know, they meet someone and somebody winks at somebody, and within an hour they're in bed, and within 2 hours they've kissed goodbye and they never see one another again. So it's like dogs and monkeys. You know, they just have their chance encounters and then they have sex, and then out of that sometimes there's a pregnancy. And so there's something to be aborted, or else carried to term. And that unwanted child becomes typically a confused, disturbed person, sometimes a violent person, sometimes they're just left and to grow up on the streets, deposited in trash cans sometimes. Or else just shoveled from one institution to another institution, or from one burdened family member to another, but not brought up, not cared for, not wanted, unwanted. The Vedic system, children should be wanted. That we have children because we intend to have children, and intend to bring them up, and intend to instruct them and train them and engage them. You know, my son will take over the business with me. They're engaged. But in Kali Yuga, children are just accidentals. They're unwanted byproducts of, you know, we had a lot of fun, but we weren't expecting this. And this becomes, you know, a person. But that person is not wanted. That person is born with qualities of passion and ignorance under which he was conceived. Sometimes the parents are drunk, sometimes the parents are stoned, sometimes the parents are, you know, high on all sorts of things. Or else just absorbed in passion and ignorance without, you know, drug-free but passion. So these qualities are transferred to the child, where they invoke the presence of the child with similar qualities. And that becomes your population. People who are Manda Sumanda Mateo, Manda Bhagya, Kupakita, or as described here, like dogs and monkeys. So what do you do with those kind of people? So the recommendation is that you have to try to engage them in some practical work. All right, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And all right, if you either be a brahmachari or be married, that also has to be introduced in ISKCON, enforced or made the norm in ISKCON. Either you're a brahmachari, or if you're not a brahmachari, then be a grahastha. Don't try to be both. That you're a brahmachari with friends from the opposite sex, that's not brahmachari, get real. So alright, there's an ashram for you, that's called grahastha ashram. Don't try to play the field and be a brahmachari at the same time. Be a brahmachari, or fine, be a grahastha. And then, don't be a grahastha for your whole miserable life. At a certain stage, retire from your family life and become a vanaprastha. Generally we have three ashrams in ISKCON. Brahmacharya, grahastha, and sannyas. But the third ashram is largely missing. For many years, of course, it was missing simply for lack of suitably older devotees eligible to become vanaprasthas. You don't generally find 22-year-old vanaprasthas. But vanaprastha life was adopted in later years, 50 or so. So now that ashram needs to be normalized or promoted within ISKCON, because now there are many candidates, either because they've grown up in devotional service and are now old enough, or because we've attracted older people. It's not the 1960s, anyone who joins has to be under the age of 22. Attracted many older people, and they should be encouraged also to retire from business and materialistic activities, and cultivate dupajan and cultivate spiritual activities. Prabhupada wanted Vrindavan especially to be for that purpose, but gentlemen could retire to Vrindavan and worship Krishna Balaram. He didn't like it when the guest house was filled with married couples and babies. He
had Anicastas in mind. Vrindavan is meant for renunciation.
So that ashram, because there's varnas and there's ashrams, so that ashram, usually we say, well, we've got the ashrams down, now we just need the varnas. That ashram needs to be populated in the Vanaprastha ashram. Very important ashram, the media, the via media between married life and totally renounced life, the Vanaprastha ashram. Then also people need to be engaged, devotees need to be engaged, some in scholarly work, some in management, some in business and farming, some in assisting. So the teachers and leaders need to see who's meant for what and engage people suitably. That will be good. And present this system for the whole world. Fine, everybody should have an occupation, but it should be based on prescribed duties and on one's actual qualifications, not on birthright. Not that you elect a person as president without qualifications, or you make him a professor, although he's drinking and smoking and womanizing. You have to know what are the qualifications for the four orders, and people should be suitably engaged. And unsuitable people should not be where they don't belong. Something else? Mm-hmm. Good.
Sometimes in the school we have a situation when somebody is not married, he's 30, 35 years old.
He's not married.
Not married. He's quite old, 30, 35 years.
And he's 30, 35.
And he's not living as a brahmachari.
And he's not living as a brahmachari.
So is this a stable situation?
Not living as a brahmachari means what?
He's living at home with his parents.
Living at home with his parents.
So is this a stable situation?
It's what?
Is this a stable situation?
Is it a stable situation?
Or he has to move towards one of the...
You have to see if it's a stable. It may be a stable situation that he's living at home with his parents. He's not living with a girlfriend. He's living with his mother and father. So that's not necessarily bad. It can be stable. Whether it's the best situation, maybe, for that person at that time, or it may not be, then his superiors have to see. Mm-hmm.
But in that situation, is he really a brahmachari? He's not a brahmachari, what is he?
Yeah,
he
exactly.
Doesn't belong to any category.
Yeah, he's not exactly brahmachari, but we don't want to force, now you have to get married. Why should he have to get married if he's not inclined that way? Maybe he's taking care of his parents, or maybe he simply doesn't, can't quite accommodate himself to the joys of ashram life. So then, all right, if he's chanting Hare Krishna and he's comfortably situated, let him do, I'd probably say let him do, you know, let him chant Hare Krishna and serve. And it doesn't matter whether he's officially in the brahmachari category, or as our meeting our standard expectation of brahmachari life. The main thing is he should be a gentleman. Yeah. That's the main thing. No illicit sex. That's the main thing. Then you're not stable. You know, if you want to have sex and become normal, then the householder ashram is there. That's
Otherwise, you may live in the ashram, you may live in some other circumstance, but if you're following the regulative principles, just like there was some temple started by a group of people, it was sort of outside the GBC and it was a little independent. Prabhupada said, just see that they're, said to the GBC men, just see that they're following the regulative principles, that's all. Doesn't matter, it's not exactly your normal ISKCON temple, but see that they're following the regulative principles, that they're holding the regular programs. Don't worry. So, same thing. He's chanting, following. I'm all right. He's not living in the ashram, but he's following. And sometimes they, such persons do more service than the brahmacharis who are living in the ashram. The brahmacharis are eating and sleeping. And the person living at home is doing lots of service. Mm-hmm.
So we see in the Vishnu scriptures that exactly king or Radha Rishi actually is the most important. It's the Radha Rishi, exactly king,
yeah.
is the most important
yes.
in the Varna Ashram society.
Most important from one point of view.
Yeah. So I mean, we cannot imagine such a Varna Ashram society without a exactly king. I mean, it's difficult to maintain.
Yeah, it's difficult to run a Varnashram system without proper king or without proper kshatriyas in place. That's a fact.
Yeah, so I wonder, I mean, when you know, like ISKCON, we want to re-establish Varnashram system, but if there's no such a king, how could it?
Well, you sort of say, well, if there's no king, then what's the use? You're not going to be able to implement it. On the other hand, if you start working at it, you may get a king. Lord Buddha was propagating his philosophy and attracted Maharaj Ashoka, the king. If Buddha kept his mouth shut and said, well, you know, without royal support, we're not really going to get anywhere, then there would have been nothing for the king to latch on to. And if the king hadn't latched onto it, it wouldn't have spread all over. So it works that way, that we make some effort. And then who knows what may happen? Who knows what may happen? That people will take the Krishna consciousness and they'll drive out the so-called king or so-called president and insist on having someone Krishna conscious. There are revolutions all over the world. Why not a Krishna conscious king? Or some intelligent king will see that this will be the best thing for my subjects. Or one way or another. So we have to make our best effort. Then the brahminical work has to be there. Kings are good. Kings need to be guided and inspired also. Even the political movements, there's always some intellectual behind it somewhere. You know, for the Marx was there, Lenin was there. So Marx was there giving the theory, giving the ideas. For the French Revolution also, there were various intellectuals. Therefore, intellectuals are dangerous. That's why they wanted to round up all those guys with the glasses, because they have ideas. Ideas are very dangerous. So we're also dangerous. We have some ideas. And those ideas, if vigorously spread, may catch on. And either by popular demand, leaders are put in place who have to be Krishna conscious, or by seeing the writing on the wall, the leaders figured, well, I better get Krishna conscious or they're going to dump me. Or the leaders say, see, this is a good idea, actually this is a better way to run a state. Or someone comes up and by his own natural qualities, just becomes a leader, and he's Krishna conscious. You know, someone comes out of the ranks of the Krishna consciousness movement and becomes the next Alexander the Great. You know, we don't really know how such things may happen. But we have to do our part. And Prabhupada, you know, he didn't know, or at least no one else would have known when Prabhupada was sitting under a tree and chanting in a park, what was going to come of him. But he did. Or he was even ready to speak to the four walls and glorify Krishna. You don't know where it's going to lead. You distribute these books, you don't know where they're going to go. So, but if you give up at the beginning and say, well, no Kshatriyas, no king, no chance, forget it, then it'll definitely never go anywhere. Or at least you'll have no part in it. It'll go anyway, but you won't be there because you won't give it up. So someone else will get the credit. So we should take it, make the endeavor. And then Krishna, you know, leave the rest in Krishna's hands. Our job is to spread this chanting, spread this knowledge. That's our job. We don't have to worry about what the result's going to be. We have to do our job. And then the rest is up to Krishna. It may become a worldwide movement. It may sputter out. Who knows what may happen. That's not up to us. That's up to Krishna. We have to do our duty. But we're assured that yes, Prithiviti Yatayatra, Nagaradi Gram, Sarvatra Prachara, we will spread it everywhere. By being, we should, Prabhupada said, it's already settled, like Krishna told Arjuna. I've already killed all these people. Bhishma, Drona, Jayadrat, Karna. They're all dead. Now all you have to do is fight and take the credit. Otherwise, if you refuse to fight, someone else will get the credit and you'll just be known as a coward. So, similarly, Prabhupada said, it's already predicted, that means it's already settled, that Krishna consciousness will spread to every village and town. He said, now you just have to do it and spread and take the credit. He said, otherwise, someone else will take the credit.
Why don't we promote a theory of monarchy?
You read Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's pushing monarchy. You read this first canto, there's so much about the virtues of monarchy that he directly says in many places that government by a trained and qualified king is far better than a so-called government of the people, by the people, for the people, and the people are all untrained shudras. Prabhupada's very clear. He's actually in favor. You read his Bhagavatam. He's quite in favor of monarchy. The so-called democracy is a cheating process. I advertise that now every man has equal power, every man has a vote, every man has a say. But it's not really like that. It's the small number of men with the money and the power. And they can, by spending money, they can manipulate you. Either they can trick you into giving them your vote, by false advertisement and false propaganda. They trick you into giving them your vote. Or else they just do it. It doesn't matter. Someplace, I think it was Stalin, he said it's not the votes that count, it's who counts the votes. The world is full of rigged elections. So much cheating goes on. the name of democracy, the public pocket is picked. And in the name of government of the people, by the people, for the people. So Prabhupada gives preference to a responsible monarchy. The trained king has such a sense of duty, such a sense of duty to his citizens, such a sense of principle, such a sense of nobility, of honor, not nobility, not a big shot, but of honor that I have to deserve, I have to live up to my name by following principles of a kshatriya. I have to, if I give my life, that's all right. If I flee the battlefield, then I'm useless. I have to be up front. And real kshatriya is something. We were talking about that yesterday. Real kshatriya. He would rather die than be a coward. He would rather die than be disgraced by dishonoring religious principles. So a trained king like Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, Prabhupada is always speaking about their qualifications. Otherwise, all right, since you have democracy and your president is elected, then you should elect a Krishna-conscious person. That's the other way to approach it. Pragmatically say, all right, if you have a democracy and it's somebody elected, then elect somebody good. Otherwise, we know that these to be elected, you're already bought and sold 1,000 times. There was one knowledgeable official, I think he was with the World Bank, he said that anyone who's done what you need to do to become the candidate, presidential candidate of a major American political party should be automatically disqualified. They're bought and sold 1,000 times, these people. They're not their own man. So Prabhupada is pushing monarchy. At least the virtues of a real king should be understood. We'll see where it goes from there. You can read Varnasankara going by Sanskrit tradition. You can read it as mixed caste, Pratiloma, offspring, which are not wanted. From that point of view, how did that happen? How did they get mixed up like that? Because they were not following principles of proper marriage, but by lust. I love her Rinatsala, I love him Rinatsala. And then people get mixed up, or nobody knows who's who anymore. Because people just, you know, couple up and uncouple, and you don't really know who's the son of what, who's the daughter of what. Nobody knows anymore. There is no family tradition. I think in Indian marriage you have to be able to say, for so many generations, you know, who's coming from whom, what caste they belong to. Now nobody knows who's what. It's all based on love, not based on duty. And love, we know, is just the cover word for lust. So, under those circumstances, you can say that they're publicly unwanted. That is to say, we don't want these kind of people. But it's also true that it does result in children that even parents don't want. And increasingly so in the Kali Yuga. What is the abortion rate? It's just a huge number of children that are not wanting. Period. I mean, we so much don't want you that we're going to kill you. And then there's so many more who, well, we just couldn't bring ourselves to kill it. We don't want it. But, you know, because of the influence of our priest, or because of fear of whatever, or because of poverty, or no proper access to a doctor, or whatever, so the kid was born. But not exactly a welcome party. Shows we're stuck. Even just an ordinary family life. You know, family has three children. The first two were planned and the third one wasn't. It's like an unexpected arrival. We really didn't some system failed. And so now there's three children where they really only intended to have two. That's, again, unwanted. It's not a public scandal. It's not, an abortion or someone left out in the streets, but really somebody, really a kid that they didn't want. So Kali Yuga, there's a lot of. Or they're wanted, but because the marriage was based on these flimsy principles of romance, they wanted to have a child, but then once they've got it, they don't want to take responsibility for it. So it's shuttled around from relative to relative. Or wanted, but by hand, a mess. You just get a mess. It's supposed to be pretty simple, There's a mama bear and papa bear and their baby bears. Yeah, that's like normal, right? There's parents, there's children, there's grandparents. But in Kali Yuga, the whole thing is abnormal. Half the marriages end in divorce, and where are the children? Here, there, they're everywhere. So you don't have stability. You're asking about a stable situation. There's not family stability. So many anomalies are there. But that's Kali Yuga. Then you have children who are lost. They either don't know, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my life. I don't know what I should be doing. And they wander from occupation to occupation, from town to town. Or else they take up some vicious way of life. Very common. We were discussing the other day, but you know, like in normal life, kid knows what he's supposed to do. I gave the example the other day. I was outside of Vrindavan Temple, Krishna Balaram Temple, in the morning. The flower sellers were setting up. So, you know, they have those cane stands, and on the top of the stand, they'll put their basket, and on the basket, they have their flowers and garlands. And so it's early in the morning, and some kid is setting up. You know, his father is there, a little kid is there, and he's setting up, and he's putting the basket there, and he's flicking the water on top of the roses, and he looks like he's been doing it for 20 years. And he's not screwed up. What am I going to do with my life? He knows what he's going to do. His occupation is already in front of him. I was in another time in Vrindavan, I went to a shop to buy a spoon. So the father is there in his shop, and the son is sitting in the front. Again, he's a little kid. And he's selling me the spoon. And his father is guiding him, you know, what to do. So he's not going to be confused. What am I supposed to do with my life? He's trained in family tradition. And he's already, you know, he's already running a shop. He's 7 years old. And he's already selling. So in stable family life, there's natural. Now, he may go on to become a rocket scientist or whatever, if he has those qualities. But generally speaking, where there's a family tradition, he, like father, like son, the children will follow in the footsteps, and then everything's already arranged for them. Or if they're a big business family, so that there's already a business for them to take over. It's not that we all have to figure out, what am I supposed to do? Yes. Where's the mic?
You are talking about family training the children.
You're another man who has to speak more slowly.
You are talking about the family training their children. Mm-hmm. And like we see in Jagannath Puri also, different families, they do different services to the deities, mm-hmm. this generation. So
there's no harm, but they should be trained.
Yeah, with training and qualification.
Yeah, they should be qualified and they should be trained. Otherwise, family is already a start. I'm born in a family of pujaris. All right, then I should learn the actual. I should become a learned Brahmin, not just a guy who's harasses the pilgrims for money. If I come from a family of Brahmins, I should actually be trained as a Brahmin.
So I have two questions. One is, it seems like there is a place of being qualification based on birth. Second is, is it in future in ISKCON we have to accept these officer principles that if they want certain family, they are expected to train their children in that way. So those who are born in certain families are trained, expected that they will be trained in that way.
You may be. Birth is the beginning. If you're born in the family of a high court judge, you may become a high court judge. Because how do you grow up? You grow up with your father talking about this case and that case, and his friends come over and they're all judges and lawyers. And so without even going to school, you know more about law than a lot of people who've gone to law school for so many years. But it doesn't mean you're automatically a judge. You have a good opportunity to become a judge. Or if your father's a professor, you may also become a professor. Because, you know, your father doesn't come home and talk about the football game. He talks about, you know, whatever the learned subject is that he's made the object of his study. So you get the opportunity for an intellectual life, for his study is full of books, you know, you have 7,000 books that you can read. You have all of that, so it's an opportunity. But it doesn't mean you're automatically a professor. You have to train as a professor, you have to take up the life of a professor, otherwise you can become a bum also. It's not just that because, well, my father's a professor, yeah, but what are you? Well, I'm a drug addict. In ISKCON also. Just like, who's that? There's one family. They're all musicians. An American family.
Narayan Prabhu's kids are all artists or architects.
Yes, Narayan's children are all in the art field. There's Hubby, his kids are all musically inclined. There's another family I'm thinking of. They're all musicians. Every one of them is a very good musician. The mother is a musician, the father is a musician, the kids are all good musicians. In the UK, Kripamoy Prabhu, who's such a nice kirtan leader, his daughters are all good musicians. So it may happen like that. You know, Krishna may take some musically inclined person and put them in a musical family and they have a musical upbringing. So you may find that in ISKCON there'll be families where you know, the father is expert, so the son is also expert, and expertise is handed down. There's nothing wrong with that. But birth is the beginning. Birth is not the be-all and end-all. You've got a, as they say, a leg up, or you know, a head start, because you're born in that family. But now you have to live up to the opportunity, or turn in another direction. And who was it? King Bharat. So, so many of his sons were Brahmins, so many were Kshatriyas. It's not just by birth. Birth is an opportunity. It probably just occurs. You're born in a Brahmin family. Now you should be, you should execute the duties of a Brahmin, not just that you claim to be a Brahmin. Like that. We're out of time, I think, aren't we? We're supposed to stop now? Is that? So, since we're supposed to stop, we shall stop. Thank you all.
How do I stop this?
How do you stop it? You first press this.